brother. What's up?
This is a good recording, man.
Yeah,
I
brother,
can dig it.
Stop right on.
Mother, mother, there's too many of you crying.
All right. Good morning and welcome to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. It's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. Good morning, G. Calvin. How you doing, man?
You know, I'm a little tired. The Bucks kept me up late last night, but I'm doing good.
Yeah, man. You were at the game, and what was the energy level like, man?
Oh, it was electric. Everyone was really pumped and into it. I was surprised how into it everyone was with how my expectations felt going into the game, but they surprised everyone and they survived to live another game.
Well, your expectations and mine and many others weren't very high considering that they were missing two of the best players in the game.
Yeah, hopefully we can get Dame back for game six, but I'm not confident Giannis will be back.
No, it sounds like
we
may get them both back. But anyway,
that would be nice.
Anyway, that voice is a good friend from many years ago, and a man that I respect immensely, Roger Quindell, who's a former, political guy in the city of Milwaukee, Milwaukee County supervisor.
Hard to be a political guy with conscience.
Yeah.
elected official with conscience.
And that seems like so long ago, Roger.
Yeah, it was.
What was that, 20 years ago?
No, it was only
15?
It was, let's see. He's good. Math.
It had to be over
16 years ago.
Oh, 16 years ago. We were both a little bit younger.
In all my chronic pain, once I left the county board, I haven't had it.
Let me ask you. You spent how many years on Milwaukee County Board supervisor?
16.
16 years. What's your thoughts now as you look at it's really kind things have really changed tremendously.
They've
right?
changed, and I'm hopeful. You know, because I think I just as I was we're coming out of here on the roads,
right.
And then I go like. We had this governor who was a county executive who turned down the train. Why on earth would anyone not want to get on a train that could be out here in 10 minutes, or be in Madison? I'm going like, oh, Madison football games at 140 miles an hour. Gee, I could be up there in about 25 minutes instead of one of my fear, the day games at 1 o'clock is there's five or six stops. So you can't really drink. If you're driving and having to go through
five. Well,
you can
make up for it once you get at the
stadium.
Yeah,
but you got to drive back. But you got to drive back. That's the unfortunate part.
I also want to welcome Mr. Mark Foreman, another good friend. Hey, Mark, how you doing, sir?
I'm good. Good morning.
It's always good to have you around, man, to see you.
Yeah, thanks.
And so I asked you guys to come up because for people who don't know, you are both wounded veterans of the Vietnam War. And as I've been watching and paying and focusing and hearing, drums rattling about where are we going to get engaged next? Is it going to be China? Is it going to be, it's like they're talking like there's a game going on. Who's going to be the next? Are we going to be ready for China? I'm like, man, what are you people talking about?
Yeah, they don't understand it. And plus, we have a country where there's the vast majority of people don't have any obligation to service. So it's easy to send other people. Well, they're volunteers. But in fact, the military is short, a lot of people. They can't fill the quota despite the fact that, great, when I was in, I think I made $200 a month in Vietnam.
Right.
That's what I made.
But who's going to rush into a war, a place where they're going to send you halfway around the world and tell you that you're fighting for democracy?
Right. Yeah.
You guys were there. You guys were in Vietnam. You spent a lot of time, a lot of your lifeblood. So, Mark, tell us about, for those of us novices, only 1% of the people actually are engaged in war. Tell us what that's like so people will stop acting like it's some kind of video game.
Yeah, that 1% represents those of us who are in actual combat. The rest were all support troops in the rear. I joined the Navy not because I was a patriot to the country, even though I am a patriot, but I don't believe in going into all these wars at all. The wars, you look way back when we first created this country and took it away from the natives. We have been on the march to control the world. That's the way I see it. That's why we've got so many bases all around the world. It reminds me of Rome, you know, and how Roman interests were spreading all over the Europe area anyway. I went to Vietnam knowing I was risking my life. I was a Navy corpsman with the Marines. So I was definitely in combat, and I saw the horror of it all. I was a medic. We call it a corpsman. So I was working with the wounded. I'm jumping mentally. I'm jumping all over the place. I was wounded on a mountain. There were 84 of us Marines. We ran into an encampment of 1,500 North Vietnamese regulars. They had us surrounded as soon as we got to the top of the mountain. They killed or wounded 80% of us in the first 5 to 10 minutes. And it was, I cannot describe the horror of it. The screaming, all the machine guns. It left quite an impression on me, as you might guess. But I was wounded. My right hip was blown off. I thought my femoral artery was broken. I would be dead in an hour. I'd bleed out in an hour. And my feeling was that the sooner the better, that I would die. But obviously I didn't. And spent 8 months in a body cast, a lot of surgeries. I haven't really told my story in quite a while. In fact, I've kind of avoided telling the story because when I go there in my mind, I'm there again. And why do I want to be there again? But I need to tell my story. I went over there as a patriot. I believed in democracy. And after what I witnessed and spending all that time in the hospital, all I wanted to know is who is profiting from this insanity. That was my main feeling. I didn't know. I knew someone had to be profiting. So in those months that I was in the hospital, I got as much literature as I could find on American foreign policy. And from the very beginning, like I mentioned earlier, when we took over this country, we were dominating. That's what we do. We dominate in order to have control of the resources on this finite planet. To me, that's what wars are mainly about, is securing more material.
So Roger, you and Mark, you were how old when you went to?
I just turned 19.
19. Roger, your story?
I was 21. For various reasons, I left and joined the military. There was multiple number of people, my friends, who did it. And when I was in the military, they offered me a job in the second place I went to after basic training. And it was to become a radar repair instructor. So I was going to go to school for 35 weeks and be a radar repair instructor. and then teach one course for a year. And then I thought, you know, and later on when I, of course, I didn't like Arizona because it was so hot and we were like 40 miles from the border. And I go, oh, I don't want to do this. So, you know, I foolishly move on. I go like, wait, I could have traveled the world teaching people how to use American radar systems. But, you know, get anywhere in the world, you'd be valuable. So instead I went to a radio teletype school in Georgia, and we had signed up for airborne. I was going to go airborne, and then I was going to go to officer candidate school right afterwards. And this is how things turn out. So there were five of us going to airborne, and there were three black African-American soldiers and two of us, two white guys. And so we were going to go to this. They were going to take us to a bar to celebrate our, you know, we're leaving here. We're going to the next stage of our lives. And one of them didn't make it, but they take us to a black bar in Augusta, Georgia. All African-American, like there's 500-600 people who are the only two white people. They had some women they knew were at our table. I only danced with them. I had one beer when I got there, never drank again. Later at night, maybe 11 o'clock, these MPs come in, military police, and they arrest me and my friend for being drunk. And we're going like, what are you talking about? We weren't drinking. Everyone's vouching for us. And they put us in the drunk tank back in the base. And I'm going like, come on, Sarge. And I was really strong then. And I said, could I do handstand pushups if I was drunk? And I'm doing handstand pushups against the wall. And I'm going like, what do you want me to do? Stand on one leg? I was doing, he said, take it up with your captain. Take it up. So they just torture me for 2 weeks. And then I go, oh, you're supposed to go to airborne. I said, I'm not going to this. And I just went to Vietnam. And I spent, I knew two people from high school in my unit. We get hit day after day in the base camp a couple of day times. When I saw the lights on at night, well, that's another story, hallucinations. But anyways, we go out in the field, and for about 3 months, we just get hit all the time, and we're along the border, and everything has been sprayed. Everything is dead. There's nothing living. You see one tree 20 miles away and something else here. And I get through all this, and we at one point, we lost 57 of 60 artillery pieces. And then I end up going to a safe place, and it all turns to
evil. So, Roger,
evil.
Hold that thought.
Yeah.
844-967-2789 is the number. My guests are Mr. Mark Foreman and Roger Quindell as they join me to talk about, you know, life in the war zone. 844-967-2789 is the number. You're tuned into the Earl Ingram Show. So this song is from 1967.
Wow.
When you guys were plying your trade.
I was just going to say, you know how to pick the music. You know?
Welcome back.
I can dance in my seat.
The Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. Text us at that same number. I'm joined by my good friends and guests, Mr. Mark Foreman and Roger Quindell. They're both wounded veterans from the Vietnam War. And I really wanted them, after watching 60 Minutes this past weekend and just watching families that have been really impacted by, you know, things that happened with our military to those families. And the fact that they're in court right now fighting what the government knows was wrong. And instead of settling with the families, this thing is going to court. So what happened was they've all this jet fuel, and in huge tanks, and they flow through pipes above the ground. You know, 20 feet wide. I mean, you guys know the magnitude of our military, mm-hmm. and and one of the pipes burst, and so many gallons of the jet fuel spilled all over, got into the water, drinking water, of people, and poisoned them. And yet, when it came time for the government to fess up, they didn't do it. Families have been impacted, children, and now it's in court as we speak. So I thought about you guys and your what happened with you guys in Vietnam, and you know, and even the guys with the burn pits, and wanted you guys to at least have a dialogue with the listening audience for all those people who are ready for us to send other young men to war. That what this really means, Roger?
Well, you know, so I get sent along the Cambodian border eventually, and we're up there for 3 months, and everything is dead. You go like, why is all the grass dead? It's all brown, and then way off in the distance, you see a tree or you see green, and we had sprayed it with Agent Orange. And Agent Orange had been banned in the U.S. and buried. They buried the whole town, the manufacturing town of Times Beach. They buried it because that's how deadly this stuff was. And then we just spray it everywhere. And the only thing that saved us was it was the dry season, because what gets it in you is wet.
Right.
So it was dry up there. But you also saw, you know, miles and miles of everything is gone. And you think, well, this is what we're doing for these people. And, you know, years later, you know, after I spent 81 days in a hospital. I've never heard of anyone who's been that out of country that long and lost. I lost 40 pounds, close to 40 pounds at the bottom. I think I weighed 122. I'd been 160, and I was maybe in the 130, low 130s. They sent me back because I had a valuable MOS, military occupational specialty. And it was just like torture, because you pray you're going to get killed, that you get killed. I don't want to go through this again. So I lived through all that, and but it just totally changed my perspective. And what are we doing when we could, these are people who are living on $2 a week, and we're spending all this money, billions of dollars, even back then, to destroy their lives. But the amazing thing is, I guess, because they're Buddhist or whatever, but they were nice. They're nice to Americans. It's a big tourist destination. And I got to go back in 1983, and they were, you know, like, oh, wow, they treated me nice and everything. And I was reading these things I'd written in stories, because I'm the veterans chair of the St. John's senior living place, so I have to prepare for Memorial Day.
Right.
And I'm reading this stuff, and it's just reminding me of how we casually treat people, both us but the other people in other countries, how we do it. But the Vietnamese, because of their religion and all, they're able to put that behind them. But I think the whole thing, when you're in a hospital and every bed is touching the bed next to you on the side. They're just totally touching. We're in the gym. Every hallway is lined with it. End of the Tet Offensive. My head is touching the head of another bed that's turned the other direction. And there's a narrow gap that most people can't walk down straight. They shuffle sideways. The doctor sees you, pull down to the end of the bed. Doctor shuffles in, and then they look at you and stuff. And you go through all that, and that's how much misery there is, that we're just overloaded. The hospitals in the U.S. are full. Hospitals in Japan are full. You know, there's no place to put all these wounded people. And you go like, what are we doing? When we could, for a fraction of that cost, we could have done all kinds of good things for Vietnam. And you go like, and why exactly did we side with the people we sided? The people we fought the Japanese. Then they fought the French for independence. And who do we hook up with? Arvin officers, the Army of Republic of Vietnam, who fought with the French against their people for freedom. Where's our July 4th and all the rest of it?
Let's bring John from Boaz on. Good morning to you, John. You say what?
Good morning, Earl. And nice to hear your guests. Thank you for your service and your sacrifice as former veterans. I'm also a former veteran, but city-wise, I used to work for the city. But I just want to give you some good news today, because my father survived the worst typhoon in Navy history. He came home, and it was a complete mess. like a train wreck upstairs in his mind. Because he kept hearing those calls for help. All of the people that were drowning that night. So, but he was able to come home and become a teacher for school children. So see, there's good news too. We can survive difficulties, but it's nice to hear them and share them with your friends.
I agree, and I'm glad he survived.
Hey, John, thank you very much for the call. You know, Mark, again, you know, John just talked about the impact. We see the physical impact. What about the mental impact when you come back from the theater of war?
That became a huge issue for me. It's not only that I have a physical wound, which was quite bad. My emotional body had changed. My intellectual body had changed. My spiritual body had changed. I was 20 years old when I came home, and I wanted to believe that nothing had changed. You know, that I was still the same guy I was when I went over there. But it became obvious to me. Do you want me to finish this up?
Yeah, no, I need you to hang on, and you pretty good, you remember. When you hear the music, 844-967-2789. I guess my good friends Mark Foreman and Roger Quindell. 844-967-2789. We're going to continue this conversation on the other side. Trying to get us to the bridge, but we may not get there. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. My guests are Roger Quindell and Mark Foreman. They are two wounded Vietnam veterans who spend their lives, you know, making people remember, you know, what transpired and supporting veterans. And, you know, it's easy to say thank you for your service, but I just think that what these men and their colleagues went through and the pain, as Mark said, that of you never get beyond it. I mean, that happened when you were 20 years old, and how old are you now?
76.
And you still... guys still just like yesterday. Let me do this. Before we come back to you guys, let's go to Al from Milwaukee. Good morning to you, Al. Thank you very much for the call. I think you've got something in common with these gentlemen.
Welcome home, my brother.
Welcome home.
You too.
A little bit. I have a little bit in common with them. I'm a Air Force veteran from Vietnam. Recon. And wounded 6 times in 3 different occasions. And I made it back, but I didn't plan on it. I went there to die because I grew up in the streets of Detroit. My family was disenfranchised by this government, and my parents died when I was 4 and 5 years old. I grew up in the streets, living in cardboard boxes, eating out of garbage cans, etc. When I got to that point in my life, I didn't have a problem with dying. I joined the military to leave here and get away from white people and go fight and die. Unfortunately, the latter part didn't happen. But on May 5th, 1967, I held my first cousin in my arms when he died. And Marine, Clay Coop, brought his body back, and I volunteered to go back. And I went back. But because of my survival instincts of living the way I had, I didn't get killed. But I saw a lot of my people go down unnecessarily. And everybody asked the question, what the hell are we fighting for? Why are we here? It was all about getting somebody more money and more resources that didn't belong to the United States of America. We lost a lot more than 58,000 people, according to the statistics, because many came back mentally wounded to the point where they could not blend back into this society. Some of us were never in the society in the first place.
Yeah. It was the most ill-designed war. On top of everything else, most of us didn't go over there as a unit. So we just went as an individual. And so I had a unit of 80 people, and I was the communications for the artillery unit. And there was three of us. I probably served with 230 or 40 people because we had 18 deaths out of, you know, the unit of 80. And then we had about 110, 120 wounded. You know, you just think, and then you have a turnover. So it's like the most ill-designed thing ever. But and I remember of the hospital, a couple things. One is just this massive packing of all these young people. And then the other one was when I finally got to leave, I would go out to go to Tokyo, which is about 40 miles away, and get on their high-speed train that went 125 miles an hour in 1968, and I just was on the freeway at, you know, at 0 to 15 for about 10 miles. So you go like, what are we doing? But the other one is I ran into a couple of people that had been in Hiroshima or Nagasaki, and they had this perfect precision stamp on their face, like someone had taken a metal cutter and boomed and it healed it, but it was just perfectly symmetrical. It was just like you could never do it by hand, or, you know, a machine could probably not do it. It was just like, but that's what we left. And we wiped out, you know, 100,000 people just like that, disappeared. And you go to send a message to the world. But today we have this thing where a tiny fraction of the population is our military. If everybody had to serve, this would be a different world and we'd have a better place. Because the one thing about the service, I still remember when I got injured and I crawled to the medic. The medic was an African-American guy. He was our medic. So you don't care about race. You care about getting help. And then he did this thing for me because he was like holding my hand. I think he thought I was going to die because my face is, you know, swelling up and all that. And when I was in the hospital, these people I had never met came to me, these black medics who were stationed in the base camp that he knew, and they said, when the morphine doesn't work for 4 hours, you got to get off. They repeatedly told me. And then when I was in Japan, when it happened, I sucked it up and went off, and it was really painful. But I saw people get addicted, you know, and you, if you don't get off, you get addicted. And that was that once we were in the combat, man, race didn't matter. We'd have these white Southern crackers and they didn't want to deal with anybody black. But man, once you're in the fire, under fire, you go like, that all gets lost because you all rely on each other.
You know, Mark, you talked about, and you always talk about, you know, these wars that our nation is involved in. And you hear people say, well, we're doing it for democracy. We're sending young men all over the world to fight for democracy and our freedoms. Your thoughts on that?
Boy. First of all, when we came over here, we Europeans came over here and took the country away from those that had been here for thousands of years. Where am I going with this? That whole attitude, manifest destiny. You know, this is God is having us do this. I would like to believe that we are so righteous that we've got a handle on what's right and what's wrong more so than any other country in the world. When you really look at our history and you really look at it, for me, it's nothing, but I shouldn't say nothing, but there's a lot of shame involved in this. You know, what I was saying, what I started to say before was, you know, when we're wounded, it's not just a physical wound. It's an emotional wound, a psychological wound, a spiritual wound. And it's a wound so deep that we don't know what to do with it. And the VA, you know, they're doing their best. They really are to try to help us psychologically, emotionally, intellectually. You know, and I really appreciate their effort. But the trauma of war is so, so deep. You know, more than 100,000 of us committed suicide within 10 years after the war ended.
Vietnam veterans.
Yes. That says so much about what war leaves with these young guys like ourselves that when we were there. It is just so unbelievably beyond that our brains don't know what to do with it. And I spent my first 13 years after getting out of the hospital either drunk or high on some kind of medication until I finally realized I was making the pain worse just in my mind to get those drugs, you know. But when I realized that, hey, I have become addicted. I'm an addict, and my brain would not admit it. It did admit that, and so it took me 13 years to realize that I was addicted, that I had this addiction. So that sent a message to me once again that there are things going on because of what I witnessed and what was done in Vietnam. Things are going on that are just so horrific. And these young guys, like we were many decades ago, we need help figuring out where to put it. You know, and the VA hospital, I'm very proud of what they've been able to do in the last, well, since the mid-90s.
So Al is back, and one of the things that I guess I wanted to ask you guys, because you guys work with veterans, you know, a lot of the homelessness that we see and continue to see are veterans still. After Roger, you guys, and even Al make this effort to try to rescue veterans, you know, they just don't, they're used to doing things on their own and being on their own. And so the damage that's done sometimes is irreparable. Al, you want to respond to that?
Yeah, See, you got to understand the training that we went through. We are trained to survive in any conditions, anywhere. And basically, when the people come back and they reach out for help and don't get it, then they go into survival mode and do what they have to do. I was formerly the vice president of the Center for Veterans Issues and the National Black Veterans Association. We went around every week with trucks full of sandwiches and food and looking for veterans living under bridges out in the woods and what have you. And we still do that. they do that. I'm no longer with the agency, but I still work with veterans, trying to help them make some sense out of what they've gone through and what they try to aspire to get back into, which is of the American world. But it's just a matter of, as I said earlier, what were we fighting for? And for many of us, coming from certain situations, and especially the African Americans, we didn't care if we died. We just wanted to get away from the prejudice and racism and all of the other stuff. We were in war all the time with the police. They hunted us down and locked us up if they didn't beat us to death in the streets or shot us. So we've been dealing with this all our lives. And the National Association of Black Veterans and the Center for Veterans Issues was born in Milwaukee by four African-American
I wish I had more time. We got to let you go. But thank you very much, as always. 844-967-2789 is the number. You guys can chime in, ask any questions you want to of my good friends Roger Quindell and Mark Foreman, a couple of Vietnam veterans. They would appreciate a dialogue with you. You're tuned into the Earl Ingram Show on 540 AM WAUK.
Still like to dance.
Yeah, right. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. My two great friends of mine, Mark Foreman and Roger Quindell, veterans of the Vietnam War, and who, after all these decades, still fighting for veterans' rights. 844-967-2789. Mark, you were saying.
Yeah, addressing homelessness among veterans. Why are there so many? The percentage of homeless veterans is much larger than homeless, society out there, white society. I learned a big lesson that when these guys came back from the Vietnam War, African Americans, so many of them came back to and implanted in the poverty that had been created by us. And that's why they're homeless. They not only, I grew up in a middle-class family. I had a lot of security growing up. Being in poverty is not secure. And so they went over to Vietnam with all this stuff to deal with, and they came back from witnessing how horrible it was. But it was a big lesson for me as a white guy to realize that homelessness has so much to do with being born in poverty and not knowing anything else. So I just wanted to share that with those that are listening. Poverty is the beast. All right.
I work with Mark. This is what kind of moved me from back into the VA eventually and all that. But we worked with these homeless vets. And when we first started, we'd be meeting at the guest house on Valiche Street, and there'd be 20 guys, and we would try to help them. And then we'd started going out to under the bridges where they hung out and this and that, and talk to people. And I think the one thing, even when they're down and out, they have it in them that they were at one time able to be very disciplined and have their life in order and do everything right. and we would work with them, and then we'd help them get services and send them to 35th and right. Elite and all this. And eventually we actually ran out of people to work with because there were so few. Because we would, and I would, that's how I first started to learn about the VA again. Because when I went in Milwaukee, I went in Madison, I went in Boston, and I still remember this guy, what do you want us to do about it? You know, that was his attitude. Like, wait, they can get to, a military contractor can get to discriminate against you because you served and got hurt in a war, and you can't get a job with them, and you can do it physically, but they don't want to deal with anybody. And then they call you back. We're not going to get you in the apprenticeship program, but we'll let you come back later and come for an 8-week thing so you can do welding in the bowels of a ship and breathe all of the right. poison. You know, well, thank you. Thank you for your service. You know, like, so, but when we work with these guys, and then that's how I eventually got back to Mark saying, talk to her. And then I started going to VA, and it was a different VA because they actually have been extremely helpful. And that's what I do for all my medical stuff now. But it wasn't like that for a long period of time. And I think part of it is, when you have an all-volunteer army and it's hard enough to get people to join, they're way short of filling quotas right. now. You better offer something. I mean, the pay scale is like amazing how much money they make compared to even, you know, standard of living and what the wages are. But people make a lot of money compared to getting $93 a month.
But you know what? They're making a lot yes. of money.
A relative to us.
And going to Afghanistan yes. or you know, Iraq. And suffering.
No, I'm not saying it's
right.
I'm just saying, relatively speaking, wages didn't go up by 1,200% for the average citizen in America.
Yeah. Well, you know? they were forced to do it because yes. who's going yeah. right? And the young 18-year-old yeah. is he's not what you guys were. They're not going.
That's right.
You know, but they've seen.
If we want to save America, what we need is a national service, and you can go into VISTA or you can go into the Peace Corps. You can do something, but you serve with other Americans, and I think it would bring people to make them understand. But if everyone did it, we'd think a lot more carefully about wars we go in.
But they're not going to allow that.
Yeah, but it has to happen because right now, 50% of the population can't come up with. Adults can't come up with $400 for an emergency. Another 20%, it goes to 60% who it's a hardship for. And then you have 765 billionaires. There used to be a couple 40 years right. ago, and you made $12 to $18 an hour working in a factory before they closed 59,000 jobs in the right. city of Milwaukee alone. And then we wonder why we have poverty here. You attract people to come to work, and then you take the work away from them, and then you wonder why you have all these social issues.
Well, you know, Roger and Mark, clearly as we get closer to Veterans Day and those kind of things, I want to bring you guys back because I just thought it was important for the listening audience to hear from two guys who've dedicated their lives after surviving Vietnam to helping other men who have been impacted and affected. And so we before other young men have to go through what you guys went through, I think it's important that the American people understand mm-hmm. when we hear the drums beating for China's necks.
Yeah.
Well, I hear people, well, we should be getting ready for China and we should, what are they talking about?
I know.
They're talking about annihilation, is what
and vast impoverishment of both countries from the process. You know, things are bad. You know, we have a hard enough time. We don't fix all the things. We don't have a high speed rail. You go to Europe and you could have hopped on a train and been here in 5 minutes.
Well, and healthcare is right. horrible.
Most people don't have it.
Yeah.
You know, I usually my bills get, the VA sent me to, I'll say their name, St. Mary's Hospital. It was $140 the first time. The second time it got screwed up and it was $960. And they bugged me for 11 months and 23 days. We had numerous conversations. So the idea of you charge seven times as much if someone doesn't have insurance, that's America.
Yeah. Well, guys, thank you very much, man.
Thanks for having us.
I really appreciate it. We'll make sure we bring you back real soon. That's Mark Foreman and Roger Quindale. 844-967-2789. Up next, Dr. Robert Craig of Citizen Action will be joining us.